Hey there, I'm Craig Collins, the CEO of Pods Loaded Media, and this is one of our new podcasts, Sex Rules. Cue the ridiculously cliche music. Our hosts are Zatanna Zarel, burlesque performer, artist, model, actress, feminist, student of the world, and Craig Collins, the idiot who's making this super generic intro. Let's talk about those sex rules. Take it away, Zatanna.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to the Sex Rules podcast. I'm Zatanna Zarel, and I've got my co-host here, Craig Collins. Say hi, Craig.
Yeah, I'm here. Running around.
We've got a special guest with us today, Kamra. Say hi. Tell us a little bit about who you are. What are you doing these days?
Sure. I am Kamra, and I am Chicago's first trans masculine belly dancer. So I belly dance here in Chicago. I do a couple of different styles. I teach, I perform. I'm actually starting to get a little bit into drag and burlesque too. So yay.
Okay. So talk a little bit about being the first one to do anything, and then specifically talk about what it means to be the first person that's doing what you're doing.
There are other trans belly dancers. So I'm not the first trans belly dancer. But I'm one of the first trans masculine dancers who is open about who I am and what I do. My transition has been very public because when I first started belly dance, I, you know, presented as a woman, and now I present more masculinely. And so that's what the trans masculine means. So I don't really identify as a trans man. So I'm not part of the binary. So I'm heading towards male, but I'm not there. So that's what the trans masculine means.
Well, how do you feel being the first person that do you know other people that have interests similar to yours? Other people that have maybe said to you that they want to kind of follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, actually, there has been, and I unfortunately have not been able to talk to them. A friend notified me that someone had come out and was performing belly dance and was in the Chicago area, not necessarily in Chicago itself, and was trans masculine, or at least trans, you know, heading in the masculine direction. I haven't gotten a chance to meet them though, and I don't know who they are. I just know they exist.
You mentioned that when you first presented, you presented as a woman, and now you're presenting more masculinely. I have noticed through your Instagram feed that you, when you were a woman, much like me as a woman, when we would go on stage and any hint of our nipple might show, we would have to cover it with pasties. Mm-hmm. Often we would make ourselves because you want it to match your costume and whatnot. But now these days, you're able to go on stage sans pasty. And I'm wondering what it feels like to be the same person and now be allowed to be on stage in a more free way.
It's actually really kind of wild, you know, because when I grew up, you know,
the first time, you know, yeah, I want to hear thinking about this.
So the first time I performed, after my surgery, I still wore, the first performance I had after my surgery, I still wore a bandeau top, because the scars were still pretty, intense, and I didn't want people to really focus on that. So the first time I actually performed after my surgery with no top on was at the Fringe Festival here in Chicago.
And so is it okay to be a little bit more specific about this surgery, just so that, like, is it?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I had a double mastectomy with nipple grafts. So that means basically, and I hope I'm not getting too graphic because I'm, I'm medically inclined, so I know all of the terminology. Sorry. They did a double mastectomy. So they took my breast off very similar to the way that they would do it for a cancer patient. But instead of removing all of the breast tissue, they just removed most of it and then contoured my chest so that it looked more masculine. And then, you know, how women's nipples are in general, a lot larger than men's are. They basically cut my nipple off, cookie cuttered out a small section of the areola and then a small section of the nipple itself, you know, the part that pops out.
Yeah.
Sewed those together to form like a male-looking nipple, and then repasted that on my chest.
Okay. I have to ask, how painful was all this? I mean, after the procedure, was there like weeks of just laying on couches and not wanting to move at all?
Pretty much, yeah. So for 2 weeks, I was basically flat out, couldn't go anywhere, was, you know, not really bedridden, but pretty close. I couldn't lift my arms above my head.
Wow.
The pain wasn't bad because they, you know, they give you kind of good drugs for it, but, you know, so, and they actually inject a long lasting, anesthetic into the wounds themselves. So it actually wasn't really all that painful. It was more annoying and gross. So the grafts, you know, like, I don't know if you know what you know about skin grafts, but the top layer of skin on a skin graft dies off. And so it's only the under layers that have blood supply that can actually survive. So basically the top layer of my nipples rotted off and fell off, leaving regular nipples underneath.
Nice.
So that was really gross.
So now we're talking about not having to cover those nipples with you're wearing a scarf usually when you were a woman presenting.
Yeah. Before my surgery, I would have to wear a bra or pasties or something like that, you know, so that of course I wasn't showing nipple. After the surgery, so when I had the male chest, you know, like I said, my first performance was with a bandeau still on so that people couldn't see that. But my first performance without that was at the Fringe Festival in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I was at this little cafe and I was terrified because I didn't know what people were going to think. You know, because I was still pretty curvy. I've actually recently lost a whole bunch of weight. So at that time I was still a little bit on the heavier side. So I was on the curvier side because my hips are still really curvy. And so I didn't know what people were going to think. I didn't know how they were going to react. I didn't know if like people were going to get up and walk out on me or, you know, were they going to like freak out and be like, why is this woman dancing topless and, you know, what's wrong with her? But it actually ended up going really well. Like no one said anything. Everyone thought it was really cool. And so it hasn't really been all that odd.
And where was this? Where was the performance?
It's actually a cafe that's not there anymore. But it was in the Fringe Festival, in Chicago, which actually just happened, maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
But it was not this one, but the one that was like 2 years ago.
I just heard you identify yourself as a woman at that time that you first exposed yourself. Do you still identify yourself as a woman?
No. And in fact, I didn't then, but I was, you know, thinking like, you know, what other people
what
might
other
be thinking.
People might.
Yeah. So it's been about 2 years since I've identified as a woman. And I started testosterone treatment about 2 years ago. And then had surgery a year after I started testosterone.
Do you identify as a man then now?
No, I do not. So I am transmasculine, and my gender is technically kind of an umbrella term we call genderqueer. So I know some people don't really like the queer label, and I understand that, but that's kind of like the best way to describe my gender or non-binary. So we have binary genders, you know, female and male.
Right.
And then we can kind of think of gender as a spectrum, but then there are also people who don't fall within that spectrum. And I feel that I do fall within that spectrum, but I'm not on either end. I'm more towards the masculine side, but I'm not all the way over there.
Got it.
So when you began this whole transition, you were in a relationship, you had a significant other. I believe you still do. I don't want to bring up any sore subjects, but wondering,
no,
you know, how was that transition for your partner?
So when I identified as a female before I transitioned, I was married to my husband, Jean-Pierre. And, you know, he was, of course, the first person I came out to, and he's been really, really supportive. I'm really lucky in that he identifies as bisexual. So mm-hmm. it hasn't really been an issue for us. You know, and I'm bisexual too. So I don't want people to think, you know, like, oh my God, he just outed his husband.
yeah.
But no, we're really open about it. So it hasn't really caused a lot of issue between us. It's been an adjustment, you know, because, you know, he was used to approaching, you know, sexuality and stuff with me as a woman. And now he's more approaching, and we have to kind of figure things out with me as more masculine. So.
Can you talk a little bit about just, I want to phrase this correctly as someone who, you know, I've lived my whole life through the typical, what you'd say, I'm a white guy, I'm straight, I'm not a lot of interesting things, I guess, is my way of saying it. So within that kind of mind frame, what is it like when you first knew that you weren't what you felt like. Is this the right way to say it? You weren't what you felt like
sure.
you were. So you are a yeah. woman. You were born a woman, but that's not what you are, and that's not what you felt like you were. So what is
yeah,
that
I wonder
kind
how
of mindset?
Early you began with those feelings, and yeah.
yeah. Yeah, it's really hard to pinpoint, and the reason why one of the reasons why I came out so late in life, you know, because a lot of people, especially these days, they come out really young. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that was because I'm non-binary, that I don't, you know, that I don't feel like a man. And it wasn't until more recently that I realized that I didn't have to be a man. I had other options. And it was just kind of a vague, feeling of like, you know, something isn't quite right, but you don't know how to put your finger on it. You know, that feeling of like you've forgotten something and you know, you've forgotten something, but you don't know what you've forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of what that's like.
I'm sure a little bit more impactful than just me forgetting my keys, but yeah, no, for sure.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of the best way I have to really describe it. Because it feels like, you know, whenever you identify and you call yourself, you know, like, oh, I'm a fangirl. And every time I'd go that, I'd kind of like cringe inwardly and be like, but that doesn't really, I didn't really feel like I had any other options. Oh. So, you know, I only was able to use the words that I had. And so it was just kind of a vague sense of something isn't quite right. I've forgotten something, but I can't put my finger on what it is growing up.
So what did you do? Did you start doing reading about it? Did you like, how mm-hmm. did you kind of come to the realization?
Sure. So it wasn't, you know, cause I knew like that trans women existed. But obviously I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a trans woman. And so I had learned about trans women, you know, through the way that most people learn about it, you know, like your Jerry Springer and, you know, stuff like that. So it was a really bad way of learning about trans people. And so I didn't really think any that would be me. And then I started seeing more stuff online about, you know, like trans men, and then people like Chaz Bono started coming out. And so it was a lot through media that, you know, that I started hearing about, oh, there are these, you know, trans people. And then I watched a documentary on Netflix that was about drag kings. So, you know, women who dress as men to perform, kind of like drag queens are men who dress as women, some of them. And so some of those drag kings identified as trans masculine or trans man. And it was kind of like, huh. And at first I didn't really think about like, oh, that's me, because obviously I still, you know, I didn't want to be a man. And so it took me a while to figure that out. But it was primarily through media. And then I started doing research on, you know, like websites and looking up. And then I started getting this, you know, like, oh, there are people who consider themselves non-binary, mm-hmm. you know, who don't identify as men or women. And that was kind of when it clicked. It was like, oh my gosh, I actually think that might be who I am. And then I kind of sat with it. Yeah.
Yeah, this is honestly why I think having podcasts like this it's so important, is because, you know, just despite the fact that we have made some progress, we haven't made enough. And programs mm-hmm. like this, where we talk about things that sometimes make others uncomfortable, hopefully mm-hmm. Is doing something to open gateways for more people to feel they can be comfortable in their own skin and discover who they are and grow within that. And hopefully their families can listen and learn and acceptance. But honest to goodness, I mean, have you faced any controversy? Like, are you dealing with any pushback from anybody? Like, have you, like, as I said just now, I mean, we haven't come that far. There's definitely still mm-hmm. progress to be made. What are you experiencing?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of why, you know, just to kind of go back to that really quick, that's why I agree to do things like that. And that's why I'm so open about it, is to help others to kind of be able to see that. I've been actually super lucky in that I haven't had a lot of pushback, surprisingly. And I was totally bracing for it, you know, especially because my transition has been so public. I was bracing for all sorts of horrible things to be said to me, because I know, like, on Twitter, you know, trans women get all the most horrible things said to them all the time. But luckily, I mean, I guess I just fly under everyone's radar. as being like non-binary. So people don't know what to do with me. They're kind of like, I'm not sure how to make you upset.
Labels are so important to people. We've talked about that a lot on this program as well. Labels are so important. And you know what? So are pronouns. Perhaps when we're introducing ourselves, we should all be saying, you know, hi, my name is Zatanna Zarel and my pronoun is she, you know, like, do you think we should all be introducing ourselves that way? Or like, should we all be they? Like,
I mean, you know, I use they, and so, you know, that, and, or he is fine. I know that some trans people, really hate the idea of introducing ourselves with pronouns because that feels like very othering.
Yeah.
Because at the moment,
I was even thinking all of us, I wasn't even thinking about it just being trans people doing it. I was thinking, should we all be doing this? But I suppose, yeah, it would start with the people who would be affected by it.
And I think if we do normalize it, you know, from someone who has, like, you know, because also people complain about this, like, it's not my preferred pronouns. Well, actually, I do have preferred pronouns because I prefer they or them, but he or him is fine. But, you know, so I think it would kind of normalize it, you know, that if we introduced ourselves, you know, like, hi, my name is Kamran, I use they, them, or he, him, which is what we do a lot, like in support groups and stuff like that. You know, we always introduce ourselves, you know, other trans people are, we usually ask if we realize that someone else is trans, we're like, oh, we don't want to assume, you know, that you use he or him just because of the way you present, you know? And so I think if we normalize it, it would be better.
Yeah. It seems like asking somebody could be kind of rude as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the best rule of thumb for me has often been, you know, wait and listen to how they describe themselves, and also, you know, when in doubt, use their name. But
right,
you know,
I have a question, because you said earlier on in the show that you weren't quite where you want to be. You said that you're still I think, am I saying it correctly, or am I wrong, am I rephrasing you incorrectly?
No, so I'm kind of heading in the masculine direction, and the it's kind of, and a lot of other non-binary people kind of find this way themselves. They start out kind of like, oh, well, I'm masculine of center. And then they get kind of masculine of center. And then they're like, maybe I'm a little bit more masculine of center. And maybe I'm a little bit more masculine of center. And then a lot of people do end up identifying as trans men, or using that label for themselves, and then kind of get more, you know, it's kind of how some people, you know, they come out as bi first because they're not sure they want to come out as gay. It's kind of the same thing. It's like, well, maybe I'm going to test out non-binary for a little bit and see if non-binary is okay. And then if non-binary is okay, can I say transmasculine? Well, if transmasculine is okay, what about transman? And I don't think at the moment that I'm heading towards transman. I think I'm fairly comfortable with where I am at the moment, but that may change.
Got it. So in thinking that way, how impactful was it, or how emotionally kind of gratifying was it when you finally were in appearance the way that you felt you were after the surgery, after everything, you know, and the transition was done?
And then to also be accepted by an audience that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. To feel not only like you were in the skin that you wanted to be in, but also that skin was being accepted.
Mm-hmm. It's actually been such a huge relief. And I know other trans people talk about it being a relief. And that's the way it felt for me. It was like, suddenly I felt like this huge weight was lifted off my shoulders and that I could be myself more. And in fact, I've had more than one person without prompting come up to me and say, your dance is so much better now than it was before, because now you're sharing more of yourself with the audience and that you're more present.
I've often said you bear more about who you are than just your body when you're up there doing things. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah. How do you feel about pasties in general now?
You know, I actually would wear them, because I know some guys do wear pasties.
They sure do, in solidarity, and also because they're sparkly, man. They're cool.
I know. It's just another accessory, right?
Yeah.
I've actually thought about, like, I have this really great glitter stuff that I put, it's super easy to put on. And I thought, hey, I wonder if I can just, like, pat some glitter on and, you know, not even actually have to have a pasty, but just have
I've
some glitter.
I've definitely gone
like,
on stage
nipple.
With body paint and called it pasties.
But one of the things that was really great for me, this is one of my favorite stories, is that I performed up in Elgin. And this was where I was, you know, like, you start to feel kind of like a freak a little bit as a trans person, especially when you're out and open. And this is when I stopped feeling like a freak. is so I had performed up in Elgin, and then a guy came up to me, and I had performed, you know, with the only thing I was wearing on my top was a teeny little vest that didn't really cover much of anything at all. It was more just like, here's some decoration. And so I was basically bare chested, and a guy came up to me afterwards and was talking to me. He complimented my makeup. He thought it was really, you know, great and all that. And I thought it was a little strange for a guy, you know, like you said, like a, you know, white, straight, you know, cis yep. guy. Coming in complimenting my makeup. I thought that was a little odd for him to do, but I didn't really think anything. I was like, oh, okay, I guess he really likes makeup. Cool. And it wasn't until I was on my way home, his wife messaged me, and his wife is one of the other belly dancers that I know. And she was like, he had no idea that you were trans. He thought the scars on your chest, so like my mastectomy scars, were makeup that I had put on for the performance.
Wow. Ah,
so that was really cool. So it was like, he even talked to me, and, you know, like he saw me perform with like no shirt on, no top on at all. And then he'd talked to me and had no idea that I was trans.
You know, you used a term, you said, feel like a freak.
Yeah.
It's such a challenging way to live it's such an interesting and specific kind of fear that you would have. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about, you know, the challenges sure. that creates.
Yeah, sure. So I know that a lot of people, you know, because especially for trans women, and I can't really speak for trans women because I don't know their exact situations, but I, you know, I follow a lot of them on Twitter. I listen to what they say. You know, I read a lot of their essays and stuff. And I know that for them, it's really difficult because they're seen as these, you know, like men in a dress, basically. And they know that's not what they are, but that's how everyone else sees them. And for them to take on those aspects of femininity is seen as kind of like freakish, you know, like, why would you want to do that? Especially when people start to talk about like genitalia, which is, you know, really not the thing that you should ask about for a trans person, you know, like, oh, what does your genitalia look like? And it's kind of like, well, do you ask other people this?
Yeah.
you know, it's like, well, I guess if you do, that would be okay.
I'm sorry. They did ask people when they were 4 years old what their genitalia yeah. was like. I mean,
right.
Right. But we've all hopefully grew from that. I don't think I've ever,
exactly.
I don't think I've ever described my genitalia to anyone in like a casual conversation.
Right. And I mean, you know, we shouldn't, you know, cause I'm fairly sex positive. So I mean, it's like, I don't feel ashamed of my genitals or anything like that, but it's not something that I would share with someone I don't really know that well,
right.
you know? I mean, that's for, you know, partners and stuff. So I know that a lot of people have this kind of, like, they get squicked out about the idea of, you know, a trans
I like
woman.
That word.
They think squicked, yeah. but they think of, you know, a trans woman, they think of it, this is a man who wants to cut off his penis. And that just really freaks them out. And the reality is, well, not all trans women want to cut off their penises.
Mm-hmm.
But then those that do, it's like, you know, that's kind of their own thing. I mean, it's like,
well, and
really
what a huge
you.
Decision to make to alter your body that way. I mean, you know, you've been through some altering surgeries. Like, what was that like mm-hmm. for you to make that decision? And were you absolutely, I can't wait going in, or was there some fear involved?
There was definitely fear, you know, the fear of appearing like a freak, you know, cause like, I'm going to have scars. I mean, even though, cause I went to a plastic surgeon for my double mastectomy. And so, you know, they try to contour your chest just right. And, you know, but there's still going to be scars, especially because I had large boobs before, you know, my surgery. So I couldn't get the type of surgery that leaves very little scarring. You know, it was that fear that I was going to be seen as this freak, that the scars are going to be huge and noticeable and awful. But I knew I needed it. I was like, I knew from the day that I realized that I was going to have to wear a bra for the rest of my life, I knew I did not want to have breasts.
Yeah.
So I cried the day, cause I remember that very clearly. The day that I realized I was going to have to wear a bra for the rest of my life, I cried. Cause it was just like, I am now chaining myself and I have no more freedom and I hate it.
Yeah. I couldn't imagine wearing a bra every day. It's great not having
so making the decision. So making the decision for you was another decision. There was another kind of like, you've been lucky and it was easy for you to make that decision, mm-hmm. or was there some serious contemplation going into it?
For the most part, it was relatively easy. I know I did have some concerns, you know, with my partner about removing my breasts, you know, which that's like, cause I know he enjoyed them. But I knew it was something that I needed to do, whether, you know, regardless of anything else. So, you know, other surgeries that are, you know, like kind of potentially on the horizon are ones that, you know, kind of like more optional, but that the double mastectomy was one, or what we call top surgery. So top surgery, I knew was like, I had to do that.
I'm going to ask
an absolute must.
I'm going to ask a question, and if it's inappropriate,
sure,
totally don't answer it. And then we'll just edit it out too. I'm curious,
okay,
since you just mentioned your husband and how he liked the way you looked before, what was it like recreating physical intimacy after your surgery? Was there any sort of, you know, relearning this is the best way I'll say it. My wife and I sort of have a rhythm. There's kind of like things that happen with sex, and they're all sort of, and I know that's probably not very good sex if there's a very specific pattern to it.
Boring.
Yeah, that sounds really boring, but there is kind of a rhythm to it. And so then if like something changed, maybe there's some sort of reestablishing of the way in which you guys are physically intimate.
Yeah. And you know, I'm sure he would be okay with me talking about it. I mean, I won't get into gory details, but
sure.
I mean, there was a little bit of change in how we approach things. You know, I don't mind talking about myself, you know, from testosterone, and stop me if I get way too graphic for
no,
you guys.
No, please go ahead.
So with testosterone, the clitoris actually becomes a lot bigger. Some of, you know, so the way that we've kind of had to approach that has changed a little bit, but you know, not hugely. And I know it's been kind of an adjustment for him, you know, without my breasts. But it's actually been great for me because, you know, I didn't really enjoy having my breasts touched before.
Sorry, I don't even respond so strongly to that one, but some people don't like nipple play. It's just not a
thing.
Yeah,
I just like, don't care either.
Yeah.
I just don't care at all. Like,
it doesn't. Yeah, yeah, right. I know,
like,
they're there.
If they're getting something out of it, that's the only reason I like it, is I like what's making them happy. But
And that was basically, you know, it was like, I mean, I didn't mind having them played with, you know, but it didn't really do much for me.
Right.
And it was a lot of because, you know, I was basically emotionally unattached to them. You know, so I mean, you know, not to say that everyone's like that, that's just how I was personally.
Well, I'm wondering throughout this entire process, if you've learned anything that you kind of didn't expect to, like maybe things went the opposite of what your expectation was, or some, like you have some sort of overarching, like just unexpected lessons.
It's been kind of a weird journey. There have been a lot of things that were kind of unexpected for me that I wasn't really thinking about. And a lot of people I know, especially for transmasculine people, there's a lot of hesitation towards going on testosterone because it does, you know, make permanent changes. And, you know, like I said, you know, some of them are a little bit on the weird side. I have a lot more hair. I mean, you know, I now have a hairy butt. So that's a bit of a change. You know, so I was like, oh, okay. But, you know,
it's horrible,
so
by the way. Hairy butts is just terrible to have one. I have one too, because there's nothing good about that. Go ahead.
I know, it's like, man.
Right.
Man, it's like, oh, I'm gonna have to actually wax myself now that I, you know, yeah. But yeah, that's fun. But you know, it's like, it's the testosterone especially has done so much for me. And I know a lot of other trans guys talk about how much of a mood stabilizer it is for them. Because you know, most people think, oh my gosh, you're gonna go on testosterone, you're gonna be nothing but a rage machine all the time. Totally the opposite. So that was a little bit of a surprise, was that it was kind of a mood stabilizer for me. I feel so much better. I have so much better energy. Before I had a lot of like chronic pain. I was even in thinking about going in to like be assessed, for like chronic pain type stuff and like chronic fatigue and all that. And then I started testosterone and that all went away. And some of that is, you know, like the depression became easier to handle and that kind of thing. So that was kind of an unexpected benefit for it. So
this may or may not be the case, but I wonder if some of the depression was also going away because you were taking charge of your body.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think, you know, people who are kind of on the fence about going on testosterone, you know, it's always worth a try. And in fact, it was so slow acting on me that it's like a lot of the permanent changes didn't happen until a lot later. And so, you know, I really encourage people to think, you know, if they're kind of on the fence of it, you know, they can give it a try and then they can always go off of it later if they feel that it's not really for them.
So that's interesting. It's not irreversible anytime soon.
Some of it will happen right away, but a lot of the stuff that happens right away is not necessarily permanent. And everyone's a little bit different. A lot of the changes, I mean, I've been on 2 years on testosterone, and there are people who have been on it a year less than me that look more like a guy than I do.
Are you going to have to be on testosterone for the rest of your life?
Not necessarily, although I soon may have to be. I have an oophorectomy planned for the, an oophorectomy is a where the ovaries are taken out.
Okay.
I have that planned for the end of December, which may or may not happen. I'm still trying to wrangle it. But at the moment, if I were to go off testosterone, I would feminize again, which would be not a great outcome for me. Mm. So as pretty much, yes, I would have to be on testosterone for the rest of my life. And after the oophorectomy, because my body would be incapable of producing any hormone, I would have to be on some form of hormone. So if I decided, you know, oh, testosterone really isn't my thing after all, I would have to take some sort of estrogen supplements after that. But I highly doubt that's going to happen.
Does your health insurance cover any of this or all of it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Surprisingly, it has covered. I mean, I still pay a fair amount for my testosterone, but it's not bad. I actually have to, I think I end up paying more for the needles and stuff than I do for the testosterone itself.
I imagine you've like been watching politics pretty closely.
Yeah. Yes. It's especially bad because I know one of my friends, who's a trans guy, he's basically on Obamacare. And so, you know, it was really kind of a rush for him to get into top surgery because they weren't sure if it was going to cover it.
Yeah,
and they still weren't going to cover it. He ended up having to... like have the doctor intervene because his first letter that came back from the insurance company was that they weren't going to cover it. So his doctor had to intervene and say, this is medically necessary. These are the right codes. This is what you need to do. And then they allowed it. But yeah.
The emotional and psychological effects of someone losing their hormone therapies in the middle of a transition is something I can't fathom. And I cannot imagine an administration that would take away somebody's therapy halfway through the process.
Well, no, and actually,
exactly.
even more so, what you just said is if you have this other operation in December, you have to have something for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there was some sort of funding change, I mean, what is the alternative then? If you went off of all medication because you could no longer afford it,
yeah, what is the effect that we're going to be? Yeah.
So it wouldn't really be good. People who don't have a lot of hormones are at risk for a lot of other things. I know, like osteoporosis. So, you know, like women who go through menopause, you know, they're at higher risk for osteoporosis and that sort of thing. And that basically that's what I would do. I would go through a type of menopause and then be at higher risk for that sort of thing.
Wow.
I mean, you don't have to have hormone to live, but it's going to cause a lot of other problems that, you know, kind of down the line that will make my quality of life very bad if I don't have the hormones.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show, for being as open as you were.
Yeah, for
today.
Sharing so much.
Yeah, honestly. And I know that I hope actually that there's listeners out there who really, you know, come to your story and hear some
they
things that they've been thinking
it.
About. Yeah, exactly. And maybe it helps somebody else even understand, because actually I've learned stuff during this show. So I thank you for that.
Sure. Yeah. And people can always contact me. I mean, that's why, you know, that's like I said before, that's why I'm open. That's why I talk about it. That's why I'm totally okay with sharing all the
weird
details.
Yeah. Can you give us some of your handles and some of your like website information or any way somebody can follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Facebook for my belly dance profile. I'm Kamra Rocks. So that's Kamrah and then Raqs. And the rocks is basically just means dancer or dances in Arabic. And so I'm on Facebook there. I'm also on Twitter as Kamra Dancer. And then my website is tattooedbellydancer.com, which has my email address, which is kamra@tattooedbellydancer.com. So they can always contact me, you know, if, I don't, you know, I'll keep everything private if people are too afraid, to come onto Facebook or whatever, and contact me, they can always email me, you know, with questions. I'm totally okay with, answering
anything,
you know, that
also
people want.
take belly dance lessons from you.
They can. And all of that information is on my website.
Cool. And then actually, you'll be able to find more of this information at podsloaded.com/sexrules. We'll post a lot of your information there along with the podcast. And you can also check out our show or contact us, sexrulespodcast@gmail.com.